To hear all the clips of the show like this and more, please sign up to our weekly Nolan newsletter at bbc.co.uk/Nolan.
Good morning, Stephen's off today. It's Chris Buckler filling in and we're going to start with the budget. But we should just give a mention to the ongoing questions about that big NAMA property deal here. There is now a police investigation and within the next half hour, the Committee of Public Accounts in Dublin is due to start a session in which they'll speak to senior officials from NAMA. We have some of the team watching that closely. If there are any developments, we will bring them to you during the programme. But now, as I say, the first all-Conservative budget for 18 years was delivered in the House of Commons yesterday by George Osborne. And as expected, he announced billions of pounds of cuts from the welfare bill. The maximum amount households can claim in benefits was slashed from £26,000 to £20,000. He did introduce what's being called the National Living Wage, starting at £7.20, and that's going to rise to £9 an hour by 2020. But there are big cuts to tax credits, which help to top up the wages of low-paid workers. And there's going to be a 1% cap on pay rises for the public sector for the next 4 years. We're going to speak to our own politicians in a moment, and you'll get a chance to speak to them too, 08459 555 678. But first, let's get an assessment of what all of this means for Stormont. Our political editor, Mark Devonport, is on the line. And Mark, this issue of welfare, it's on all of the front pages today. Now, welfare, as we know, is an evolved issue. However, ultimately, is this going to have to be passed on? And what does that mean for Stormont?
Yes, the difficulty in looking at this budget is, of course, some elements of the budget are not devolved. And so some of George Osborne's announcements will just automatically come in here. Other matters are devolved. And that will then depend on whether we get a deal over welfare and benefits, which has so far eluded the Stormont politicians. So the matters that aren't devolved are taxation. And that means that child tax credits, the limitation there to two children, that will come in automatically because it's not devolved. Also, the National Living Wage, as it's being called, that should come in because, again, that's part of overall economic taxation policy, not devolved. So I would imagine that that will come in here. But when we talk about lowering the benefits cap, that is part of the devolved Stormont matter. And in fact, at the moment, there's what's known as a £26,000 benefit cap in place elsewhere in the UK. It doesn't apply here as yet because it was part of that welfare reform bill which Sinn Féin pulled the plug on just a few months back. So the question as to whether some of the benefit changes, particularly the cap which has been announced, will apply here, will depend on either whether we get that elusive deal or whether we get into the situation where Theresa Villiers comes in and imposes these measures along with the other measures that we haven't implemented directly.
And you have talked at length about this £600 million black hole in the budget, which is created by the fact that the welfare changes, these welfare reforms, have not been adopted here. These are more welfare reforms. Potentially, does this mean hundreds of millions of pounds more that could potentially be a black hole in the budget? Does this create a further crisis for Stormont? Does it push it down the line?
I think it certainly does create some extra complexity. I mean, it's no surprise that the Nationalists, who rejected the implementation of the previous welfare reform package, didn't like what George Osborne had to say about child tax credits and about the benefit cap, and they've been critical of it, both Sinn Féin and the SDLP, saying this will increase child poverty, this budget. It will be anti-public sector, anti-student, and so on. So that criticism was to be expected. What this maybe does in terms of making the negotiations about sorting out welfare more complex is that it has probably changed some of the calculations. For instance, if we'd gone for a £26,000 benefit cap, I know that the calculations were that 6,600 families in Northern Ireland would have been affected by that. I don't know what the number will be if we go for a lower £20,000 cap.
But it's certainly going to be more, isn't it?
You can bet your bottom dollar it will be considerably more. And therefore, if we're in negotiations about welfare and people are saying, look, if, say, the government's saying, say, the DUP saying, look, we've got to live within the terms, the cash amount that was set down in the Stormont House agreement back in Christmas, this maybe gives Sinn Féin, the SDLP, another argument to say, that was set in a different context. All the sums are changing now. It's George Osborne who's moving the goalposts. And so that maybe makes those negotiations a bit more difficult.
Yet we still have the Chancellor in this statement saying it's critical that the Stormont House Agreement goes ahead to help bring about this economic recovery. Another key part of that economic recovery, as far as local politicians were concerned, was the lowering of corporation tax. That's still just a possibility. And we also have the lowering of corporation tax across the UK. Does that make the lowering even further here more or less likely?
It does two things to it, Chris. On the one hand, it makes it a little bit more affordable because lowering the corporation tax to 12.5%, which was the target of the Stormont politicians in order to match the same headline rate south of the border, that would have cost Stormont a considerable amount of money. There were different estimates, but certainly people were talking around, you know, 300, maybe even £400 million. That's because any benefit accrued here locally had to be paid back under European rules. Otherwise, it would have been regarded as a state subsidy, which is basically outside the rules. Now, if the difference between a local rate of 12.5%, say we were to set it at that rate, and the UK rate is smaller, and that would be the case if the UK rate comes down, then it means that Stormont can more easily afford going with that. It's not such a big hit on the local budget. The other thing, though, is that if the difference is smaller, then maybe it's just less of an incentive if you're not standing out quite so much from the crowd. Obviously, it closes the gap with the Irish Republic. Maybe they are our main competitors, so it's still desirable from that point of view. But the bottom line about all of this, of course, is that whilst the government has already legislated in principle for a cut in corporation tax locally, that is one of the many things which is caught up in the deadlock over welfare reform and the budget. And we still don't know quite how we'll find a way out of that.
Mark, thanks very much indeed. That's Mark Devenport, our political editor. We'll go to your calls now. And first to the politicians. On the line from the DUP is Gregory Campbell. And on the line from Sinn Féin is Dathi Mackay. Dathi, if we turn to you first, there is a talk here about the need for economic recovery. That is certainly something the Chancellor is pushing. But in terms of welfare, and no agreement as yet about what was already proposed, what was already being put in place, where does this budget leave you as far as doing a potential deal over Stormont House?
Well, I think Mark made an important point there, Chris, in that the goalposts are continually being moved by the British government. And of course, we're in the middle of the 2015-16 financial year, and in the autumn the British government will move the goalposts again when they will announce £20 billion worth of cuts to public services. So they're making an impossible situation even worse. But certainly this is not an economic budget. First and foremost, this is an ideological budget that robs from working families to give to the rich, because there have been many families out there concerned about the cuts to tax credits, the working tax credit, the child tax credit. And we must remember that they get those credits because they don't get enough to stay out of poverty from the work they do each and every day.
Yeah, but the
freeze in terms of those credits will keep them in poverty because the cost of living will undoubtedly increase over the next 5 years.
You knew, though, Dathi, this was coming down the line. You had a fair idea of just what was going to happen in terms of benefits and trying to slash the amount that was spent on welfare. Now, considering the amount that is going here, I'm not sure if you've been able to do the sums or been able to work this out, but certainly the lowering from £26,000 of the benefits cap to £20,000, I mean, Mark Devenport was saying there, it is going to affect many, many more families, but it's also potentially going to create this bigger black hole in Stormont. Can Stormont survive these welfare cuts unless you agree to change, unless you agree to put in place these reforms?
Well, there's no doubt that a further reduction and the benefit cap would hit households hard. And from provisional figures we've worked out, we're looking at about £115 a week for many large families out there in the north. And of course, we should look at the regional impacts here as well, because of course in London, they have got a different cap than the rest of Britain and here in the north. So that is unfair to say the least, especially given the fact that the DUP continually talk about parity. Well, parity is certainly broken when it comes to protecting London and the south east of England. But we must remember that in terms of the north, we are one of the most deprived areas under the remit of the British Chancellor. We have more larger families. We have greater poverty. So the effect on the north here will be greater than elsewhere.
And Gregory Campbell, that is something that you will be concerned about from the DUP, that there are going to be vulnerable families hit. Do you want to pass on these cuts that the Chancellor is putting to the benefits cap?
Well, there's a number of things in the budget, if we look at, particularly in terms of the child tax credit. There's some logic in what the Chancellor is proposing to do if there was an economy that was creating private sector, reasonably well-paid jobs of a magnitude that would soak up those seeking to get out of welfare dependency and into work. There is some logic in that. But the problem in Northern Ireland is that we are not yet at that stage in the economic cycle. For example, he made the case, as did the Prime Minister, that the state is subsidising employers who are paying employees a lower than expected wage, in the knowledge that for many of those employees, they will get topped up on welfare. Now, if he does that and suppresses that in terms of the expenditure from the exchequer, then employers in turn will say, well, I can't afford to keep as many people in work as I previously did. So I'm going to have to make redundant in the case of small employers, perhaps one or two people, in larger employers, perhaps more. So there is a chicken and egg situation here, which the Conservative government haven't really addressed, particularly in areas of higher unemployment like Northern Ireland.
Okay, and there's no doubt, Gregory, that there are issues around tax credits and things which you don't have control about, and you can lobby about those. But in terms of Stormont, you do have control over the issue of welfare. It's not being taken back by the Secretary of State. She's made no indication of that as yet, although she has hinted towards it on occasions that it is a potential something she might consider in the future. If this is the budget that you have to deal with, in terms of specifically welfare, are you prepared to put in place this £20,000 benefits cap? Will you be pushing Sinn Féin to do that deal?
Well, Mark Davenport is absolutely right in terms of the numbers of people affected by the 26 cap. What we need to get is an assessment of the numbers that would be affected by a 20,000 cap. But I think anyone would be able to work out the fact that those numbers are likely to increase substantially. Because, remember, the average wage in Northern Ireland is about 22,000 to 24,000. So a significant number of people will be affected by the 20,000 cap.
So are you sympathetic to Sinn Féin's position now about welfare? Are you saying that actually they've got it right, that actually if this benefits cap is going to be lowered, perhaps you do need to stand together and fight the Conservative government?
No, it's not a case of are we sympathetic to Sinn Féin's stance. Our stance in the House of Commons has been to oppose the excesses of the welfare regime that the Tories are seeking to implement. I just wish that Sinn Féin would stand with us in the House of Commons on Tuesday night when this comes to a vote. But yes, we will stand with anybody that will stand beside those worst affected, because we must protect those who will be worst affected by the implications of the budget unveiled by the Chancellor yesterday.
Dahi, do you feel that's the DUP kind of moving over towards you a little bit in this whole dispute about welfare?
Well, I think there's a lot further to go, Chris. But I think that key in all this is ensuring that the DUP publicly declare what their economic policy is in regard to public spending. Because for all of the crocodile tears that we've seen in the Assembly in regard to this, when pushed on the matter, the Finance Minister did not declare that she would like to see public spending upheld and indeed increased, because in her view, that is the only way that you get the wheels of the economy moving again. Like I've already said, what the Tories are doing is ideological and will actually lead to a slowdown in terms of economic growth, especially here where we're starting from a low base, where I would agree with Gregory. So much more needs to be done. And the DUP, rather than being involved in a charge of the Light Brigade in Westminster, our power is in cooperating with the devolved institutions in Scotland and Wales, and that the DUP, along with ourselves, will work more closely as a cohesion unit with those administrations, then we could affect more change that way.
Gregory, is that fair, crocodile tears?
Of course it's not. I mean, Dominic Kaye's gone off on a ludicrous tangent here. See, after we reach next Tuesday night, in terms of what stance anybody might take about this budget, it's academic. Where Duffy Mackay's colleagues and I and everyone else who's elected 2 months ago should be is in the House of Commons to express our view and to cast our vote. There's no point in protesting outside the House of Commons or lamenting that this is awful and we're going to have to do something about it when you can actually do something tangible inside to try and mitigate the problem.
Well, let's put that to Dahi, because it's an interesting point, Gregory, because you had Martin McGuinness, you know, the Deputy First Minister of Sinn Féin, making speeches inside the House of Commons recently in which he's specifically talking about fighting austerity. Now, if you can go into the House of Commons, Dahi, and make speeches in a committee room, what is so different about going inside Parliament and making those speeches and fighting austerity where you actually have some power?
Well, in case you missed it, and you know, the public will be well aware, Sinn Féin stood on a manifesto in which we would not take our seats. We have an abstentionist policy. And in terms of the MPs, we already have taken their seats in Westminster. You know, they haven't delivered.
Policies change over the years, Dahi. You know that as well as I do. You're a practical politician.
If you let me finish, Chris, saying that they would deliver change and protection for people from the north, and we knew it wasn't going to happen, and it hasn't happened. If we effect change from the Assembly, from the institutions in Belfast, and through direct negotiations with the British Secretary of State, with the British Prime Minister, and the way to do that is through negotiations at a local level, but also in conjunction with Scotland and Wales, because Scotland and Wales recognise that they are getting a bad deal as well, and they are a lot stronger because they are singing from the same hymn sheet. Now, if we are also saying the same as the Scottish administration especially, and the DUP are a little bit shy about adopting the same approach, then that is what actually weakens our position, not whether we take our seats in Westminster or not.
I want to get some calls in. 0845955678. Liam, Alex, Fred, John, all lined up for calls. I'd like your calls too. But before you go, Dahi, because I know you're short of time, I want you to listen to what Teresa Villiers had to say on Good Morning Ulster a short time ago, because she spoke specifically about Sinn Féin. This is Teresa Villiers, earlier from Good Morning Ulster.
I believe that the situation is still pretty depressing. We have a hardening of rhetoric from Sinn Féin. But I will continue to work with all of the five parties to make the case for doing this. It was a good package in the Stormont House Agreement. We need to find a way forward to resolve the impasse on welfare reform, to deliver a workable budget, to ensure the executive fends off the, you know, the problems that come with having an unworkable budget and the impact on frontline public services.
Is there a hardening of rhetoric, as she says, Dahi Mackay? Are we being pushed by this budget into the a further state of crisis, potentially?
Well, there certainly has been a hardening of position, but the hardening of position has been by the Tory government. Now that they are in government on their own, they are going for an ideological campaign that will affect everybody across Britain, and especially here in the north. But you know, with each announcement of cuts that is coming in this financial year, that is undermining the good faith that was in the agreement reached last Christmas. So she cannot ignore that fact, and she also cannot ignore the fact that the British government does not listen to the administrations in Belfast, Edinburgh and Cardiff. It refuses to work with them, and indeed when they make announcements like this here, they don't even have the good grace to speak to the finance ministers beforehand. So if the British government want to see a resolution to the issues here, then they need to work with us as equals and not treat us as subjects, as is the case from the British Chancellor.
And without a deal, Gregory Campbell, I mean, we talked about the hundreds of millions of pounds, the £600 million figure of a black hole. If there is no deal between you and Sinn Féin to put in place welfare reforms, of which these are more, potentially that figure just grows. Are we in a state of potential crisis in Stormont? Can Stormont operate?
We won't be in a stage of potential crisis. We will be in a major crisis. But let's cut through this business of Sinn Féin putting capital in terms of an SNP administration in Scotland and a Labour administration in Wales and all of us standing together. Have you or I or anyone ever heard the SNP in Scotland or the Labour Party in Wales say we are prepared to bring our administrations down on the basis of welfare reform? You haven't. And the reason you haven't is that they don't say that. They are not standing on the same ground that that Sinn Féin are trying to claim they are standing on. Yes, we must oppose the excesses of welfare reform, but not to the point where we make it worse for the more vulnerable in each of our communities and societies. That's the major issue and the major level that we all need to grasp.
0845 955 678. Liam is on the line from Draperstown and he wants to speak to you, Gregory. Liam, what do you have to say, Gregory?
Hello, Gregory. I'm listening to you there, and these Tory cuts are hitting the most vulnerable in society, and yet none of the politicians here, but I especially address this to you, wasting 24 million in Twaddle Avenue. We spend 4 or 5 million policing the Orange Parades every year. Can we afford this?
Well, of course, there's a whole lot of aspects of public service in Northern Ireland where money is being wasted, and we've got to try and cut back.
No, but this can be stopped.
On all of it, just as a whole lot of other things can be stopped and adjusted. But, you know,
but that's a silly answer. Like, the politicians, you and all the politicians should be combining together to stop this. We need an air ambulance here. A doctor died here. People are fighting on his behalf to provide an air ambulance. £25 million were spent in England talking about marching and parading. Is it not time we grew up here? You know, like.
Liam, do you think that if we are in the House of Commons next week and it is a tight vote, and remember the Conservatives only have a 12-vote majority, do you not think that the people in Northern Ireland would want all of our MPs to stand there as one in defence of the vulnerable, where it matters, where our votes can actually,
Gregory,
make a difference?
Can I say another thing, Gregory?
That was a question, Liam.
Eh?
It wasn't a rhetorical question. That was a question. Do you not think that we should all stand together where our votes actually count?
But what I'm saying, Gregory, should you not be standing here and stopping this waste of millions? Is this not the place to start here? Stop the waste of millions here. With a children's cardiac unit, which is more or less collapsed, with 40 cancer drugs that are not available here. You know, why not start here?
Well, what you did accept there, Gregory, was that you accepted that there was money being wasted as a result of policing the protests that are taking place at Twaddell. There's no doubt that there's a strength of feeling there, and there have been protests for 2 years. If you feel it is a waste of money, in your words, is it time for those protests to come to an end, for time to save some money there?
Well, I think all of us, including the Orange Order and virtually all the political leaders that I've heard speaking on this issue, want to try and get it resolved. And there are propositions on the table to resolve it through the Stormont House Agreement and previous agreements. Now, we then have to say, well, why are those agreements not being implemented, which would help address the problem and could minimise the problem and hopefully over a period of time eliminate any need for protests anywhere. Yes, that's what we all should be doing. But remember, it's not the DUP or unionism that stands in the way of implementing the Stormont House Agreement.
People not happy with what Sinn Féin had to say either. Let's go to Alex in Lisburn. What do you have to say, Alex?
I just think we need to take a reality pill. I'm listening to Sinn Féin. And I agree with Gregory Campbell. He's talking about, Sinn Féin talk about standards of Welsh and Scouts. They've already the first tranche of welfare changes were implemented at local levels. We haven't implemented them. From what I've seen of the budget, it's going to be implemented at Treasury level, tax credits and that sort of thing. We have no little control over that. And to suggest, I mean, we, in Northern Ireland, we represent, I think, 2.5% of the UK population. For Dr. McKay and Sinn Féin to suggest that we can tweak the tail of the UK and we can determine government policy.